Para exchanging with Soignier, leading in to the box. Gorgeous, unselfish. Patty Bonga, another touch. Carving up York United.
Mahoush is going to score. Oh, space to Matthew on the line. How did that not end up in the back of the net?
Touch, Dyer still has a shot on the post, deals on the rebound. It's 2-0 for BFC. Welcome back to the CPL Newsroom presented by Volkswagen, your weekly Canadian Premier League wrap-up show. I'm Charlie O'Connor Clark. That's Mitchell Tierney over there. And we are 2 weekends into the 2024 CPL campaign. Another 4 games in the books. We had one per day this weekend, which is a little bit of a change of pace from last week's triple header on Saturday to kick us off. But for very interesting, intriguing games to talk about, Mitchell and I kind of, we were there at York yesterday for that 9-5 derby, but we also had Vancouver beating Halifax on Thursday. We had Pacific beating Valor on Friday, Atletico Ottawa and Cavalry playing to a draw on Saturday in the nation's capital. And then obviously yesterday, Forge kind of battering York United 3-0 at York Lions Stadium. I think that we should just get right to it, Mitch. And we're going to start out west on the West Coast, not as west as we're going to get this week, but we're going to start on Thursday night in Vancouver, where, you know, Afshin Gotby and Rocco Romeo keep saying that the Eagles have landed. Other people are saying that they're soaring. I don't know really which one it is. I think we got to get that straight at some point and figure that out, because they're a little bit contradictory. But either way, Vancouver Football Club 2-0 to start the year. 2 home games, 2 wins. This one 2-0 over last year's third place team, the Halifax Wanderers, thanks to that Rocco Romeo goal that you're seeing right there if you're watching on YouTube, and Alejandro Diaz shortly after. Mitch, this was an exciting game and obviously a fun one to watch if you're a Vancouver fan. What did you maybe see from this one?
Yeah, Langley hasn't been a particularly fun place for the Halifax Wanderers, but it has been a fun place to watch football lately, that's for sure. Like you said, we don't know what the Eagles are exactly doing right now, but they are picking up 3 points, and that's what matters right now to a side that didn't do that a whole lot to start last season. So the fact they've already gotten, 6 from a possible 6 is, really encouraging for this team and will only push them on. And, in the early stages of a season like this, sometimes you're living off vibes a little bit. And when the vibes are good, that can be the difference between picking up points and not, and getting out to a good start. And, one side here on, when was that, Thursday? Very clearly getting off to a good start. And the other one, there's some question marks about.
Yeah, and we'll get to those question marks in a sec, but I want to stick with Vancouver first. You said that the vibes are good. They are incredible out there on the West Coast with this club. So many kind of newcomers to the team really picking up kind of their familiarity. Excuse me, with this group.
I thought we agreed on no three-syllable words.
Yeah, that's a little bit too big for this early in the morning when we're recording. It's 11:30, by the way. But actually, what's kind of happening with this Vancouver team is a lot of their returning players are really, really looking motivated and energized. Obviously, Alejandro Diaz scoring his first goal in, I think it was 13 or something games for this club. Obviously, scored in his first two last summer when he came in from on loan from Sogndal, but then didn't score the rest of the year. So it's huge to get him back on the board, especially after a couple assists last week. Rocco Romeo, his first for this club. And you know what? You mentioned that we don't really know what the Eagles are doing. It's our joke. They're landing, soaring. I don't know. But one of the problems for Halifax in this game, man, was they didn't know what Vancouver was doing. And Patrice Geiser talked about it after the game, how frustrating it was to play against this kind of unpredictable, agent of chaos team that just was very clearly trying to you know, play the ball up the field and win those battles, those second balls. You know, Rocco Romeo was sending them, you know, diagonally out to Gabby Bitar, out to you know, whoever else, to Ben Fisk, to Caden Chung, even was getting high up the pitch. And then Vancouver would just win those battles. They'd win the second balls, and then they'd be off to the races in transition. And that's something that's very difficult to defend. You know, they win a corner to score the first goal, and it's obviously quite poorly defended, I think they'd say. And it's, you know, an unfortunate moment for Jeremy Gagnon-Lapierre to, I think, maybe just isn't quite fully aware of you know, the time he might have had or the spacing, because he sort of puts it a little bit too powerfully back at his goalkeeper, and there's not a lot that Jan Fillion can do before he spills it. But then the second goal is just a great kind of transitional goal. You know, Moses Dyer gets up there, he brings the ball down, he drives into the box, and then it's that two striker setup that we've talked about with Vancouver, where Alejandro Diaz is right behind him in that spot to score the goal, and it comes off the post. And you know, that's maybe something that's also a little bit, you know, intriguing with this team, right?
Yeah, the understanding between those two already, and the work rate. Like, Moses Dyer won 8 duels out of 8. So he was like, he dominated up there. And yeah, again, it's, you know, Dyer does everything right, like cuts into the box, beats a couple players, takes the ball off Dan Mimic, like some unbelievable moves, and then hits the post. And Diaz is right there. He's right there to follow up on the chance. Like, that's the perfect striker instinct that, you know, maybe we haven't seen the ball fall to Diaz in that way, certainly over the last little while. And he finally gets his goal after an excellent first week where he was kind of the provider for them. Dyer got in behind a few other times. So yeah, that front two and how quickly they've worked out together is really exciting, because I think something we'll talk about certainly on the other side of this match and maybe across the league a little bit is, you know, some of the other new look attacking forces haven't exactly gelled or started to work out so far this year. And that's been a real problem for other teams is getting that production from the number nine. So the fact that, you know, Vancouver are already getting a lot of it is a huge positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we get into Halifax and what maybe frustrated them here, I just want to hear another voice on Vancouver before we close the book on them, because they are one of the best stories in the league at the moment. And, you know, Rocco Romeo is really in many ways the heart and soul of that team. He's been such a big part of that group, and he's such a, you know, a vocal leader in that locker room. So let's go back and see what he had to say after starting the season 2-0 in Langley.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I think us goalkeepers and defenders, you know, we really, when we keep clean sheets, that's like a goal for us, you know. So for myself, and I know probably for David as well, you know, we go crazy over clean sheets. And it's just very contagious. You know, once we do it, we just want to keep doing it again. And like I said, the boys are very committed to making this home, this home stadium, like a fortress where it's difficult for teams to play against or even get a goal, even get a result for that matter. So, you know, like I said, we're never satisfied, and we just need to keep pushing on. Can't get too complacent. Always have to stay humble and grounded. And, you know, we'll see everyone in Calgary.
We'll see everyone in Calgary. And we are going to talk about that in a sec, because that is a huge game. But Halifax Wanderers, 2 games in BC to start the season, within a couple days of each other. No goals, no points. Mitchell, at this point, you know, how concerned do you think they should be?
I think another thing that concerns me is they've got a really tough stretch coming up. I mean, they host Atletico Ottawa, and then they've got Forge on the road, and then they're back against Calgary, obviously, with the CanChamp game in between those as well against Saint-Laurent. But, you know, we saw them start the season slow last year, but they were at least able to pick up points and, you know, put in maybe better performances than they did against Pacific. So, look, I mean, in a league as competitive as this, you know, you can't win or lose the season in the first couple of months, I don't believe, but you really don't want to fall behind very quickly because, you know, you'll stay behind. We saw that with a lot of clubs last season where they got off to poor starts and could never really, you know, catch up. So, I think there is a level of concern certainly for Halifax right now, but, you know, I think they could quickly turn that around as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I can remember how long it took them to win their first game of the year last year. I think they didn't win till their 9th game, and they still finished tied for second on points. But, you know, a lot of changes for this Halifax team for this game from the Pacific game on the weekend before. You know, there's four really natural central midfielders in this squad, with Ramprasad and Daniel Laperre kind of holding, and then Caligari and Aiden Daniels sort of dual number 10s up there. Again, it's a Halifax team that is very committed to its identity. It wants to possess the ball and play the ball on the ground and build up that way with, you know, with that kind of football. And Vancouver didn't really want to go toe-to-toe in that sense. And I think that's something that frustrated Halifax in this game. And obviously it worked out better for them. But one of the things that Halifax are going to have to figure out is they need to get the ball more into those dangerous areas. And Christian Valeski is... you know, a guy that they want to be that focal point, that number nine that maybe they didn't necessarily have at all times last year. He had 10 touches in this game. Mm-hmm. That's it. They just couldn't find him. You know, obviously there's players that are not fully healthy in a squad. Massimo Farrin is a guy who scored 8 goals last year. He was the most effective attacker for this Halifax team. He only started training a couple weeks ago, so he only had about half an hour in him in this game. Even Aiden Daniels wasn't fully fit, but he went 90 minutes. So, you know, there's a lot still to come for this Wanderers team. But, you know, obviously, I don't think there's any reason to panic, but definitely two frustrating results where they definitely were not able to impose themselves in the way that they were able to at, you know, later points of the season last year. But anyway, enough from us. Let's go see if Patrice Geiser is concerned. I doubt he is, but let's see what he had to say after this game in Langley.
You know, sometimes you get some bounces, sometimes you don't. You know, I mean, this is a game where we fell short on some of the things. But as an example, they hit the post, rebound comes to them, they score. We hit the post, the rebound doesn't come to us. So sometimes you need a little bit of bounces. And, you know, you're right, we never lost 2 games in a row. And I think the expectation of wanting to grow the team is something that we have to manage and understand that our aspirations coming into the year was to do even more than last year. And you know, the good news is that everyone's going to talk about tonight, and that's great. But, you know, I have to talk about the next 26 games. So whatever it is, we leave it on the field and we move forward. And, you know, we were a team that by mid-August, almost September, were the lowest goals against. So we got to get that back. We were a league that led the league in passes. And, you know, I was just looking at the stats right now, and our total shots were the same. The passes were the same. Crosses are the same, but they created more dangerous opportunities, and that's kind of where the breakdown is right now.
Okay, let's stay in BC, but let's move on from this game. Friday night, Pacific FC, Valor FC, you know, Pacific and Vancouver both staying at home and kind of swapping opponents for this one. Yeah, that's right. But, you know, obviously a strong first half from Valor, I think, and maybe sort of similar circumstances to the way they lost in Vancouver. You know, they don't take advantage. Pacific make 3 changes at halftime. They bring on Data Luke, they bring on Toussaint, they bring on Josh Hurd, and, you know, Pacific take over in the second half. Mitch, do you think that, you know, 2-0 in this game is a reasonable result, a reasonable summary of the way this game played out? And what did you like about Pacific getting the job done here?
I think so, but again, like you said, it's a little unfair to Valor's first half performance. Like, it doesn't tell the full story, but it is a fair result in the way that Pacific came out in the second half. And, you know, what I like is this is a big year for James Merriman as a manager. You know, 2 years after taking over a team that won the CPL finals, you know, there is expectations to continue to keep them among the top teams in the Canadian Premier League. And obviously, this offseason was a big one for the club. You know, they seem to lose a decent amount of talent every offseason, but this year, especially with Didich and Aparicio going out the door. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him. And when he needs to switch up his team in this match, he absolutely does. He makes 3 impact substitutions that come in and change the game. And, you know, to have the confidence to do that, to see where the game is going. And yeah, I think that's a real positive for James Merriman, and also for Pacific FC, again, showing that they have this depth that they can bring 3 players off the bench and, you know, completely change a game like this. Like, that is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to stress how big the difference was between these halves. You know, first half, the shots are 7-5 for Pacific. Second half, they're 10-2. Mm-hmm. So first half expected goals, 0.44 to 0.29. Second half is 1.36 to 0.05. Like they took over in the second half, and largely on the backs of players that were huge difference makers for them last year. You know, Dada Luke, Josh Hurd, Toussaint. Josh Hurd comes in and, you know, obviously scores a goal off the bench. He's a guy who is the captain of this club, is still competing for minutes in the front line, you know, not necessarily going to start every single week. He comes in, he makes a difference, and that is such a big deal and so important for this team. Rion Moore getting the assist on that. He was very good in this game as well, I thought. But I think maybe the biggest story for me with Pacific, who, again, 2-0 to start the year, haven't conceded a goal yet, quite impressively. But Sean Young, you know, plays his 100th game for this team, signs a new contract a couple days before. I think it was his 24th birthday on Saturday, and he scores a goal in this game. He is, you know, it's kind of a perfect script for him. So I think he is probably the best voice for us to hear wrap up Pacific's thoughts on this game. So let's go back and let's hear from him.
Of course, I'm buzzing with the result. You know, that's two in a row at home. I still don't think we've, you know, played, you know, how we want to play or as good as we can. But of course, you know, 3 points is what matters in this business. And, you know, for me, I'm personally very honored to, you know, sign a new contract, reach 100 games, and then, of course, score tonight to help the team win.
Sick jacket, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
If you're listening on the podcast. 100th...
Pardon?
If you're listening on the audio form of this podcast, like, go look at Sean Young's jacket because it's dope. I want one.
When but I cover I my 100th CPL game, can I have one?
Yeah, I'm confident. I don't know. Maybe we should count that. I'm sure you're there already. But,
probably.
I think we would have to. If I ever play 100 games for Pacific Football Club, I'm going to demand a jacket. Anyway, Valor, very quickly, just to wrap us up. You know, as we say, you said earlier about Halifax, you don't lose or win a season, you know, in the first two games. Valor's had these two road games. They've had very positive moments, you know, flashes of potential, haven't been able to see that out. The second halves have been, you know, a problem, I think, in both of their games against Vancouver and then against Pacific here. Mitchell, I know there's a lot of new faces in this team. Just what, you know, where are you right now if you're Phil Dos Santos? What are you thinking at this moment?
Oh man, there was a moment in that second half where Jordan Haynes tried a tried a chip from halfway line, and I thought Phil was just going to leave the stadium at that point. He just looked so frustrated. But look, I think it was incremental growth between the two games, and I think that is a positive. At least they've started out matches very well, which was a problem last year, and you know they've been good in both of the first halves so far. Maybe not great, which they want to get better at, but they've been good. I think, you know, over the course of a road trip, you have to kind of just take the positives and keep building on them because it could go off the rails very quickly when you're all together for that long and you're all, you know, away from home. Like you have to try and keep the vibes good. Like we said with Vancouver, you know, you have to keep those good vibes and try and, try and build on the more positive aspects. And I think there were some in this game, obviously not enough to get a result. But yeah, you have to kind of keep learning and moving on and just see what you can do in terms of, you know, getting better each week.
Yeah, Valor, it does not get any easier for them, unfortunately. They spend their next four games in Ontario. They play at Forge next weekend, at Ottawa in the Canadian Championship on Wednesday, at Ottawa again the following weekend, and then they're in York the weekend after that, I believe. So, you know, That's a tough run.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, Valor is a team that's always played Forge very well. They've got a couple of really good memories at TD Place, too. And they were very, very good against York, especially at York Lions Stadium last year. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? That could be kind of the road trip, the long stretch that would, you know, bring this team together and turn things around. Okay, on to Saturday afternoon in the nation's capital, speaking of TD Place, where Atletico Ottawa and Cavalry were playing. Obviously, Ottawa looking to build on their home opener win last weekend over York. Cavalry looking to, you know, get on the board after losing, giving up a lead and losing to Forge the weekend before. You know, Atletico Ottawa take the lead in this one. And it's Amir Didic off a set piece. That's something that, you know, every CPL team has seen in their nightmares before, except maybe for Pacific for a while. But, you know... he's probably back. He's probably in their nightmares now as well. That is kind of just a pretty classic, you know, ball on the head of the tallest player in the box, and he gets to it and he puts it in the net. But the big story of this game is what happens after that, because, you know, around the 60th minute, both teams make a load of changes. Cavalry bringing on Lucas Diaz, and they bring on, they bring on Frazier Aird, they bring on, you know, Toby Warshevsky, Ali Moussi around that point, and they change the game. You know, Cavalry take over, they take control, they have so much more of the ball at this point. Ottawa at this point has moved into a back five, which I don't think Carlos Gonzalez wanted to turn into as much of a 5-4-1 as it did. And we'll get to that in a sec, but it did end up being quite flat and sort of two banks. Cavalry just press them and they press them and they press them. Ali Moussi is an absolute nightmare on fresh legs against a more tired Matteo Debrienne at left back. And then finally, it's Frazier Aird playing the ball into the box off Chris Twardek's leg. You know, it's probably a little harsh on him because he played quite well at right back for the most part, but he gets tangled with Leighton Brooks, another Cavalry sub, and it's in the back of the net and it's 1-1. And I feel like if the game had gone another 10 minutes, I probably would have favored Cavalry to score again and win that game at that point. It looked, they had by far the more energy and the impetus at that point. But the story for me on Cavalry side is how many difference makers they brought off the bench and how big a difference that made. I think that this is something that maybe, I don't think there's a team in the CPL that can do that in the way that Cavalry did, with bringing these kinds of players off the bench, change the game, add so much energy, and you know, find that goal. Mitch, this is you know, very, very impressive depth, isn't it?
Yeah, and what I also like is the mentality. I mean, obviously it was an own goal, so maybe, you know, the celebrations were a little muted, but they get that goal and you see them scoop up the ball and go back to the halfway line. Like, this isn't a side that, with what they did last season, is happy with just 1 point, no matter where they're playing. You know, they want to go for the win and they have that confidence that, you know, they saw, like you said, they saw where this game was going. They saw that if this game, you know, was a few more minutes, they probably would have picked up the victory. They know they've done it. They know how, you know, vulnerable Ottawa's been in late game moments, you know, in recent years. So I really liked that from them, just seeing that little glimpse of mentality. Like, that's what separates, you know, championship sides from you know, those who are contenders at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, ironically, Tommy Wheeldon Jr. had no idea it had been given as an own goal until his press conference. He was very confident that it was Leighton Brooks' first goal for the club.
Yeah, that would have been a stone cold celebration.
yeah, scoring your first goal for, I think Leighton knew at that point that it hadn't gone off his leg, but, you know, he still actually does very well, and I think nearly scored a winner just a couple of minutes after that as well. But anyway, speaking of Tommy Wheeldon Jr., he had to say, I know that Cavalry have had some tougher games at TD Place in the last couple of years, but they're quite thrilled to come out of this one with a point. So let's go back to TD Place and see what he had to say after this game.
Yeah, we did. As soon as we scored, we were going, and that was our thing. As soon as the first goal had gone in, we went to try and get the equaliser, and then we only play one way to try and finish off. And I thought the lads that came on as finishers, you know, Leighton, Toby, Moussi, Frazier and Lucas, give us that extra step. And I think it's important, because too often I've left here empty-handed with our team, and I think it's now, you know, nice to leave unbeaten against them.
Yeah, we mentioned the difference makers off the bench. Okay, to Ottawa. Mitch, I'm going to start here by just reading a quote from Carlos Gonzalez, and then I'm just going to throw to you for your thoughts. Okay? So Carlos was speaking about, you know, that choice to change to a back five after they conceded. And he says that they were feeling through halftime that Cavalry were creating superiorities outside on the flanks. We tried to manage it in a different way for the first 20 to 30 minutes. We managed it with Sissoko dropping a bit, changing the position of Sissoko and Ollie Bassett. But Cavalry were still creating those superiorities and we weren't reaching those spaces. We felt that was the moment to fix the structure so we could control those intervals and those superiorities. Maybe that message or that structure, instead of matching them up and maintaining the medium high block and getting to them in a 3v3 in the pressure, made us drop a little bit more. The idea was to do a 5-2-3, not a 5-4-1, that made us drop into straight lines and give them meters to make us drop. The idea was a little different, but we have to keep working because this can happen throughout the season, and it continues to go on. But Mitchell, your thoughts on whether this was a mistake from Ottawa, whether it didn't necessarily execute tactically the way that they'd intended, or maybe Cavalry just took over at that point?
Yeah. Look, I think there were some nice things that they did. Like I don't think it was a complete drop into a 5-4-1. Like we saw Tissot hit the post at the end of the match that could have put the game to bed. But yeah, like again, with how many times they conceded late goals last season, you just don't want to invite that pressure at all. You don't want to do anything to really invite that pressure. And I thought that they kind of did. Yeah, they just can't afford to make that a storyline again this season. You know, and it really was, because they missed the playoffs by 2 points last year and they dropped 12 on goals after the 80th minute. You know, whereas you look at Cavalry, they dropped, I think, 15 points for winning positions, but no one talks about it because it doesn't matter. They won the league by 13 points. So those are kind of the storylines to stats comparisons that can happen. So yeah, I think it was a mistake when you have so many players that are good on the ball that could hold the ball a little bit better to take away those outlets a bit further forward up the pitch. And yeah, we saw them maybe do a little bit better than we've seen in the past, and not just completely step back. But at the same time, again, Cavalry were able to get that equalizer. So it's kind of moot point.
Yeah, and I do think that this would be a completely different discussion if that Tissot shot doesn't go off the post and goes in the net, because that was literally seconds before Cavalry equalized, which is very painful if you're an Atletico Ottawa fan, unfortunately. And that would have probably put the game to bed and been a very different story. But again, you know, the narrative is there and it's unfortunate. But I do think that there were still signs of this Ottawa team and the damage they can do and how good they can be. I think they're still trying to find the right way to penetrate and to, you know, get all of these talented players as much time on the ball as they need. You know, they're looking to release Balu Tabla in the right ways. It's tough to, you know, find outlets for Ollie Bassett as well as Aparicio, as well as, you know, everybody else. Matteo Debrienne, I thought, was very good at fullback in this game again. But there's, you know, so much talent in this team that I do think it's going to take a little bit for them to actually figure out their footballing identity, because you can bring a lot of talent into a room, but you still can't just say, go do football, go do soccer, go do something. You have to, like, it is going to take time for them to build a more nuanced way of playing, I guess, a Cavalry team that knows how it plays and has known that for a little bit now and has been very effective in that way. Anyway, that is our third game of the weekend. 1-1 draw, so I think, you know, both teams will be able to take some positives and some negatives out of that going into, well, Cavalry going into the Canadian Championship, Ottawa going into next weekend. Anyway, on to the final match of the weekend, Sunday. Mitch, you and I were both at York Lions Stadium, where York United played their home opener in front of their best crowd at that stadium since 2019, just over 2,600. But Forge FC, as they've done a couple times in this stadium, they took control late in the first half. They score this killer of a ball from Daniel Parra and a great finish from David Chouinard. Second half, again, they kind of press their advantage. Benny Badibanga scores. And then the third goal, obviously a really, really frustrating one for York to give up. Niall Higgins, you know, maybe misjudging the role of the ball and thinking it was going to get out of play. He sort of, you know, holds it off and thinks that he's going to be safe. But Tristan Borges swoops in around him, picks the ball off. I think it stayed in. I haven't seen an angle yet. But, you know, either way, I think you do have to not take that chance on yourself. But either way, that is David Chouinard's second goal of the afternoon and of the season. Mitch, let's start with Forge. You wrote quite a bit after this game about, you know, how deadly their front four was and how effective they looked. Just tell me what specifically looked so good about this Forge team in this game.
Well, yeah, even before, you know, they scored that opening goal, like the signs were there. You could almost predict exactly how that goal was going to happen, and it was going to be the movement of that front four, because they were causing all kinds of problems for York. I think there was an opportunity like a few minutes earlier where Borges goes out onto the right to join Chouinard and chips it over the back line, and Chouinard just drags it just wide, and that's the warning sign. And then, you know, we saw Borges and Chouinard kind of flip roles consistently throughout that first match. Sometimes it'd be Borges going through the middle, and then Chouinard would be on the right. Sometimes they're both on the right to kind of, you know, have some interplay. And then we see Chouinard dart into the middle and get in between the lines for that opening goal. You know, they go into the second half, Batty Bonga and him switch sides. Now they've got new problems, and that obviously plays a role in the second goal. And then, you know, again, the third goal, not only is it Borges getting the ball, but Schwanier being in that right position. And that's something that Bobby Smyrniotis always talks about, is, you know, they need to get their best attacking players in the right zones to score goals. And right now with this system, with the way they can change and move, and the understanding between the players, they are consistently getting in those dangerous scoring positions. And, you know, that's got to be so difficult to defend against. And if you're Forge, it's got to be so much fun to play with right now, because the understanding between those attackers are class. And then you've got a guy like Daniel Parra who's come in and can make those passes. Yeah. I mean, we see him break the line so well on that first goal. The second goal, he plays a great ball into Borges that Borges shields to Batty Bonga. So, I mean, man, Forge, and they're looking like it again this year. And they're starting way better than they usually do as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the first time they've ever won their first two games in a season, because they've never won their first game in a season. Yeah,
they've only won their second once. So
yeah, exactly. Now, so yeah, they are scary if you're an opposing team, especially just seeing how effective, how sharp, how fluid they are executing in the final third in this game. They are lethal, and you cannot afford to make those mistakes against this team, because, you know, all of these, you know, we know all of these players individually, and we know how dangerous they can be and have been at times. But if all of these guys, if Schwanier and Borges and Batty Bonga and Taron Campbell are all going to be in good form attacking wise at the same time, that is a lot. These two teams obviously play each other again in like a week and a half in the Canadian Championship at Tim Hortons Field. I do not think York will be forgetting this very quickly, because they were going to come back. And, you know, arguably they've been better against Forge at Tim Hortons Field than they have at home historically. So we shall see if things change there. But meanwhile, York United in this game, Mitch, we saw a lot of positives in Ottawa in the first game, especially in that first half. They maybe took the foot off the gas a little bit in the second half, as Martin Nash said a little bit. But what did you make of this game? Because I do think the first half, again, was fairly even, but again, it's that sharpness, that little bit of extra in the final third that I think kind of made a difference, right?
And the energy, like, it's a little concerning that you have the best crowd, and that's been like something that they've talked about a little bit, is how much they were hoping this home environment would boost their, you know, pretty dismal home record last season. And they get that environment. The crowd was excellent. It was a great atmosphere at York Line Stadium. There was, you know, it was a celebration-like atmosphere. It felt like they were ushering in a new era off the pitch, which they really are. And then on the pitch, you know, they concede once, maybe twice, and just deflate. Like, Forge dominated from the point they scored onwards. York barely had any opportunities until maybe towards the end, when Forge were controlling the match at 3-0. So that's really disappointing, because, you know, that's kind of what we saw a little bit down the stretch, and certainly in the middle points last season, was when this York team got hit, especially at home, they just, you know, they just lack that energy, lack that belief that they can get back in games. And that was disappointing to see from a team that showed in week one they have all kinds of talent and that they really can hurt opposing sides, and showed flashes of that in the first half. And then, you know, again, it's the mentality that I think needs to be significantly better. And I think Martin Nash would agree with what he said post game.
Well, speaking of Martin Nash and what he said post game, let's actually go hear what that was right now, if producer Benedict can roll that clip.
I thought the first half was okay. You know, we created a couple of chances, sort of day, and real naive goal to give away in the last kick of the half. Which hurt going into halftime. And then I don't think we rebounded from it. I think it was the second half, we didn't play with urgency. We didn't get stuck in. We just kind of played a little bit and gifted them two goals with naive defending. So very frustrating, and shows we have a lot to work on.
A lot to work on indeed. Let's just wrap up this game, though, with, again, one of the probably the standout performer, and possibly the standout performer from the entire league this week, David Schwanier, who has two goals, especially, you know, you have to feel good for him after he missed a lot of last year with knee surgery, worked all the way back to be able to play in the final. But, you know, he's hoping to have a much bigger year this year. So Mitchell spoke to him on the pitch after this game. So let's go back to York Lions Stadium one more time and hear from the brace scorer, David Chouinard.
Post-game reaction presented by Allstate. Mitchell Tierney joined here by David Chouinard. David, you guys win the first 905 derby of the season. Yeah, I guess your thoughts on the match.
I think it was an overall great performance by the team. We came ready and showed up on the pitch. Guys were energized, and it's always fun to score three goals on the road.
And that front four, really fluid. I mean, you and Borges were switching positions a lot. You know, Benny coming in. You switched wings at halftime. How much fun is it to play with a group that just like seems to understand each other so well at this point?
Yeah, it's always fun to play with good players. We understand each other. We're trying to get better. Rotation is getting better. We just need to build on that and try to find a way to get better, be more dangerous. And I mean, they're good guys too. So we support each other, and at the end, everybody's winning.
Big moment for yourself just before the end of the first half there. What was going through your head is, you know, Para plays that ball through and you're in the box and just kind of swing at it.
Good ball from Danny. And I just try to hit it as clean as possible. That was my mindset. No thinking really behind it. And happy to find the goal.
Thanks so much, Danny.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on from this weekend, let's take a quick look at the standings through 2 weeks of the CPL. Vancouver FC still up top with that +5 goal difference. VFC fans, take a look. I'm sure that's a gorgeous sight for you. But we have three clubs on 6 points with Forge and Pacific there as well. Atletico Ottawa in fourth. Cavalry hanging on in fifth with that 1 point that they got in Ottawa. Meanwhile, Halifax, York, and Valor all still waiting for their first points of the 2024 season. They will have opportunities to get those this weekend with the schedule that we can put up here. You know, obviously, as I mentioned, there is that Cavalry Vancouver Canadian Championship game first on Tuesday, which is obviously a huge game.
It's real this time. He's not lying to you. There are Canadian
championships. I showed up, man. I was there. Nobody else was there in Calgary. But, you know, they said it was this week. Anyway, that's on Tuesday. Big game. Obviously, both teams want to go get that two-legged tie with the Vancouver Whitecaps in the Ken Champ. That would be amazing for either of them. But anyway, Friday night, York United and Vancouver FC at York Lions Stadium, 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 Pacific. Halifax Wanderers, their home opener on Saturday, nearly sold out, I believe, against Atletico Ottawa, 2 o'clock Atlantic, 1 o'clock Eastern. Also on Saturday, just after that, Forge FC at home again, taking on Valor, 4 o'clock local time kickoff, 3 o'clock if you are in Winnipeg. And then finally, the TonyBet match of the week on Sunday, April 28th. Cavalry hosting Pacific FC in their first home Canadian Premier League game after their, you know, first game at home in the CanChamp. They're taking on Pacific at 3 o'clock local, 2 o'clock Pacific. Speaking of TonyBet, by the way, you can go to campl.ca/predictor. You can win $50 gift cards if you just answer questions about the games that week. And obviously, if you were able to get every prediction right, you are able to win a prize of up to $100,000. Which is a lot of money. There's trips to the CPL final, a lot on the board. So again, go to campl.ca/predictor. That's presented by TonyBet. It's a lot of fun. You can, you know, test your knowledge of this league. Now we are just about on the edge of the end of this show, but I think we have some stoppage time. I think we got to get like a whistle sound effect or something that we can play in future just to, you know, judge this up a little bit. But anyway, producer Benedict is going to come in with some mailbag questions and then I believe some rapid fire questions. So I will let you take charge from here, Benny.
Yes, sir. You have three questions in the mailbag this week. We'll start with Michael on Twitter, who asks, who is your player to watch this season? Maybe a surprise player of the year candidate or someone you think can make a jump to a higher level.
I'll go with Gabby Bitar. I don't know if that's a stealing answer, but with the way Vancouver FC are playing, with the way he finished last season, yeah, I think that this is a player who's shown internationally as well. He can maybe reach that next level. And yeah, he might be a player of the year shout this year.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Benny Badibanga. He's just been so electric to watch. He's so fun on the ball. You know, he has played at a high level in Belgium, and just the more and more he kind of gets integrated into this Forge tactical identity, the more it's very clear that he's maybe the perfect kind of player for it. So that's very, very exciting to continue to watch. All right, Benny, next question.
Next one comes from Vancouver FC fan Stefan on Instagram, who asks, are the Eagles the real deal?
Are the Eagles the real deal? Are they landed? Are they soaring? I don't know, but I think they are. I think they are. I do think that, you know, they're obviously not going to go 28-0. They're not going to win every game. But I do think that I see enough talent in this squad. I see depth in this squad and experience this year, and obviously just a lot more belief maybe than they had at this point last year, that this is definitely a team that will be at the least probably challenging for a playoff spot towards the end of the season.
Yeah, with how quickly they've worked together. And again, these aren't unknown quantities. We know Paris G is a top fullback in this league. Yeah. We know Dyer and Diaz are top strikers. Like, all throughout their lineup, they have players who have consistently proven over the years that they are good CPL talent, if not great CPL talent. So, yeah, I do think they are for real.
Question three.
Last one comes from Eris on Instagram, who asks, maybe for Mitchell, since you were covering York yesterday, is there any updates on the York United injury situation?
I haven't heard any specific updates. I mean, I saw a lot of the guys around there. We saw Dennis Selanovic, he's back now. So that'll be helpful in attack. But I think as always, York are kind of dealing with a few injuries, and we'll see. We'll see how many of those guys they can get back over the next few weeks. They have a busy schedule. So we'll find out.
Quickly from York's match notes, they say that Juan Cordova is imminent to return with a knock. Brem Samaro had a groin injury. He was on the bench, though. But Oswaldo Leon, Matthew Baldissimo, and Frank Stirring are all listed as week-to-week with various injuries. It might be a little bit more time before we see those guys on the pitch. Anyway, Benedict, I believe you've also prepared some of your own rapid-fire questions, and we are going to be really quite rapid because we're over 41 minutes here, but I will let you take this for a drive as well.
Yeah, so these are very hard-hitting questions. We'll start with the first one is, some of the biggest stars in the CPL have scored already this season. Brady Banga and Shawnee Airpo scored twice, but who do you think of the players who have scored so far will finish the season with the most goals?
Mitch, you go first.
I'm going to steal an obvious one and go Alejandro Diaz. I think we've seen him score a ridiculous rate before, and with the way Vancouver's creating chances, I can see him really putting up big numbers again this year.
Let's say... Gabby Bitar. Final answer.
Next one, Halifax is yet to score a goal this season. So which will be the first Wanderer to find the back of the net this season?
Dan Nimick from the penalty spot.
Dang it, that's the easy answer. I'll go Dan Nimick, not from the penalty spot.
Dude, okay. Okay, man.
I like it. We'll see. The next one, the CPL record for assists is 9. Tristan Borges already has 3 this season through 2 games. Will he become the first player to reach 10 this season?
Yes.
Yeah, that's an easy yes.
Easy yes. Okay.
If he stays healthy, if he can stay healthy, yes.
And last one, we've seen several players make their returns to their hometown so far this season, especially in Vancouver. Which Canadian player would you like to see come back home and sign for their local CPL club?
Jonathan David.
Oh. Darn it, that's a good one.
Let it go on. They could use a striker.
I'll go Tejan Buchanan. I mean, it's not quite local, but the York United.
I feel like Tejan would play for Forge because he's a Sigma guy, isn't he?
That's fair. Maybe he'll play for both.
Maybe he will. A few guys have crossed that divide. Anyway, thank you very much, Benny. That was fun. please. You know, don't hold any of this stuff against us. We are not to be held accountable for the insane things that we may or may not say at the end of this show. Anyway, thank you very, very much for sticking with us through this second edition of the new CPL Newsroom presented by Volkswagen in 2024. We'll be back next Monday. Make sure you send in any kinds of questions or feedback you might have at CPL Soccer on social media or at either of us individually. Again, thank you very, very much for watching. Mitchell, thank you very much for putting up with me for this long. Thank you, Benedict Rhodes, for producing the show and coming in hot with some questions at the end there. And we will see you next week.
Para exchanging with Soignier, leading in to the box. Borges, unselfish. Batty Bonga, another touch. Carving up York United.
Mahoush is going to score. Oh, space and Mappy on the line. How did that not end up in the back of the net?
From Nimick, it's Dyer. He gets an extra touch. Dyer still in.